Apologies, there's no podcast of today's programme for copyright reasons. Instead, in case you didn't catch it, here's a repeat of the recent programme on Nathan Tinkler.
The richest man in Australia under 40 is an enigma and a colossus both in body and in impact. He likes fast cars, fast horses, football and big deals. Nathan Tinkler comes from a family of blacksmiths, loggers and earth movers, and now in Newcastle he is the biggest man in town. So much so that these days it's called Tinkler Town. I'm Brendan King. This is Background Briefing, and Nathan Tinkler wouldn't talk to me. Neither would lots of other people, as you'll discover in today's program.
No comment, mate.
Really? You don't want to talk about it? It'll only take you a couple of minutes. But one man, ABC announcer Aaron Carney, would. He's lived in Newcastle for 40 years, and he's used to speaking publicly about what makes the town tick. And he's watched the rise of Nathan Tinkler and broadcast about Tinkler's journey from obscurity to a young billionaire.
With every conversation with Nathan Tinkler, you get such disparate opinions. Somebody you talk to will paint him as this big bully boy, hard man who sacks people with the back of his hand and punishes those that he doesn't like in business. And then for every one of those that you speak to, you will find another who will talk about the millions of dollars that he gave to charity last year and how we would be without two of our biggest community assets in town in our two sports teams had he not stepped in, and how he's this quiet guy who, it's not that he wants to be reclusive, it's that he doesn't want a big note himself. So picking who the real man is amidst those polar opinions is a challenge.
You say that he's a quiet, hardworking, you know, local boy done good. Mm. He likes to be known as a hard worker.
I think he certainly likes to sell the narrative that he was a good old front rower Sparky from the Upper Hunter who made some smart decisions and used his business nous and entrepreneurial spirit to turn himself into the billionaire as he is today.
I asked Aaron Carney, what's ahead for Nathan Tinkler?
How the next chapter plays out is going to be most intriguing, because this entire community is, at least to some degree, in his hands. Whether you are a sports fan, whether you are a charity recipient, or whether you live in the shadow of a coal loader, or work in one of his mines, or train one of his racehorses, or just live in a town where the thoroughbred or mining industries are big business, or are any of the staff that are associated with our various professional sports teams, there are a lot of people in the hands of Nathan Tinkler.
Time will tell. Aaron Carney himself is affected by the man. He partly owns a PR company that was responsible for Nathan Tinkler's bid to buy the Newcastle Knights, a bid that was said to have cost $500,000. Background Briefing went on search of Nathan Tinkler and the people who know him.
Hello.
Hello, Scott.
Yes.
Look, I understand you used to work for Nathan Tinkler, and I'm just hoping to speak to you about it. You know, just your experience, really.
No comment, mate.
Really? You don't want to talk about it? It'll only take you a couple of minutes. That was the third refusal of the day, and a fourth person simply hung up. So to the story of what makes Nathan Tinkler. Newcastle has a rugby league team that some years ago had given Australia Andrew and Matthew Johns. Andrew Johns is considered by many to be the best player ever, but off-field, he's been embroiled in controversy regarding racism and illegal drug use. Matthew Johns has also faced allegations of a group sex incident in New Zealand. And the team has been struggling financially. It doesn't have a leagues club bankrolling it through poker machine revenue, and it's always just been in the hands of the members. The Newcastle Knights have seen better days. Enter Nathan Tinkler with a bag of money. But he needed at least 75% of the membership vote to be able to buy the team. So determined was he earlier this year, Nathan Tinkler appeared in local television ads asking the members of the Knights to vote for his proposal to buy the club. This is an ad Tinkler put out at the time.
Tinkler will move the club and he can take it here and he'll change the colours and he'll do this. That's not what it's about. You know, those sort of things are locked away. You know, they're in a vault. I'd love to see the Knights on the front page of the paper for winning games.
That was back in March. And now, 3 months later, Nathan Tinkler has achieved 97% of the members' vote. And he is a household name in the Hunter Valley region of New South Wales, a region obsessed with rugby league. It didn't all go smoothly. Tinkler's first offer was disputed by board members, and at the last minute, he pulled out of the deal. Changes were made to the contract, and 2 days later, the deal was back on. And it's not just the members who are supportive of Nathan Tinkler owning the club, it's also the fans. At a recent Knights match against the West Tigers in Sydney, I went to the game.
In West Tigers territory, trying to find a Newcastle supporter. There isn't too many of them, but I thought we'd go and try and have a chat to one of them and see what they think about the Newcastle Knights takeover by Nathan Tinkler. So Nathan Tinkler's just bought the Newcastle Knights. What do you think?
Look, I actually think it's a positive thing, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, it secures the future of the club for some time. I think it's a pretty good deal. You know, obviously it's not as much money as what a lot of people made it out to be, but, you know, anything that moves to kind of ensure the future of the club is positive for mine, yeah.
Nathan Tinkler's bought the club.
Yep.
But as a Knights supporter, how do you feel to be a supporter? Has it changed?
You know, I feel a little bit more confident that, you know, maybe knowing some of the detail around the position that they've been in financially in the past, so hopefully keep a few more kids in the region as well up there coming through and not losing the Cade Snowdens and the like, you know, because at the end of the day you've got to have a good club with good facilities. We haven't really had that for any period of time, and hopefully Tinkle will bring that to us, you know, with some much needed coin.
Encouraging more people to go to games and become members themselves is part of Nathan Tinkler's plan. The tickets are now $30 and crowds at Leichhardt Oval in Sydney are quite good. But Newcastle is still a bit down. So now Knights are offering new members there 10 games for $68. Ian Kirkwood, journalist for the Newcastle Herald, says the Knights deal was very important for the pride of the region.
I mean, the ownership of the Knights is very important to Newcastle because it's a major part of our psyche. To me, as a transplanted Sydney sider who came here in the early 80s, having the Newcastle Knights on board is the thing as much as anything that's put Newcastle on the national map in people's minds. Andrew Johns, for better or for worse, is, you know, is the most well-known Novocastrian, and it's his football brilliance that gave Newcastle an identity that was something other than a BHP steelworks town.
The greatest coach in the world, Wayne Bennett, has been signed on by Nathan Tinkler for a 4-year deal that's said to be worth $10 million. Bennett starts next year, and some of the best players in the NRL will also start with the Knights next year. But it doesn't stop there. Tinkler is pouring money into the team. And he's also bought the city's major soccer team, the Newcastle Jets. Last year, Nathan Tinkler put up $2 million for the most famous footballer in the world, David Beckham, and Team LA Galaxy to come to Newcastle and play the Jets. One story goes that as part of the deal, Nathan had the opportunity to meet up with Beckham and the team when they were in town. On the day of the meeting, Tinkler cancelled. Nathan Tinkler now owns the Jets. Surely someone will tell us what happened.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Tony. Look, I'm hoping to speak to you about the Newcastle Jets. You've been heavily involved in the club for some time, and I'm just hoping to see if you wanted to get your view of the takeover and the like last year.
Who is this?
Oh, Brennan King, ABC Radio National.
No comment, mate.
You're not to... Very few people are willing to talk about Nathan Tinkler. People become elusive, untraceable, rude and cagey. People were reluctant to talk to me, apparently because Tinkler can make or break the town and the people in it. Maybe it isn't healthy to get on the wrong side of him. What is known about Nathan Tinkler is from the odd interview he's given and from one or two brave people who have had relationships with him in the past.
Hi, you've reached Tinkler Group. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
Calls to Nathan Tinkler's office were not returned. His media agent says others working at the Tinkler Group were unavailable to speak to background briefing. Oh, hi, this is Brendan King from ABC Radio National. This is a message for Nathan Tinkler. It's Brendan King. Could Nathan give me a call back, please? I'm hoping to speak to him regarding a profile piece I'm doing about him. My number's 02. So we went back to a rare interview he did when he was trying to buy the Newcastle Knights with Newcastle television station NBN. Here are some of the extracts where he's being asked about his early success in business.
Yeah, overnight success, I think that's what people determine when you sort of reach the point and they want to know you. But no, it was a bit of a hard slog. It was a tough sort of 4 or 5 years to get to where we were, but some good people around me and support of family and stuff like that, we got there, so it was good.
How important has family been in that success to this day?
Oh, of course, you know, absolutely. You know, I'm still just an average Joe, and, you know, if you haven't got family, you haven't got anything. So, you know, same as today as they were then, they're still my number one asset.
Yeah, of course, married to Rebecca and 4 children.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
At a youngish age.
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, up the valley, we didn't get All-Star in that back then, so I started early, and, you know, it's been good.
Obviously, success has its benefits, but I should imagine there are times that it has its downsides too. So wealth and expectations are not everything in life.
No, exactly. And, you know, people tend to draw a lot of conclusions and all this sort of stuff about, you know, what you like based on what they read or hear or see or some bloke down the pub or whatever. And I think the wealthier people are perceived or something like that, the taller the tails are, so to speak. But, you know, I'm still the guy that a lot of guys in the valley worked with and know and played football against and all that sort of stuff.
That's Nathan Tinkler speaking to NBN sports commentator Mike Rabbit. There'll be a link to the full interview on the NBN website on the Background Briefing site. One person who did speak to me was Nathan's school principal in the early 90s at Inverell High School, Paul Alliston.
He was like many of the other boys. He liked his sport. He wasn't particularly inclined to study, but that didn't make him different from many of the other kids. I recall him as a easygoing, friendly sort of a lad. Bit of a lad at times, like many of the other kids.
What do you mean by lad?
Well, he needed the odd reminder that school actually was about study, and that in between the sport and the social life, he probably should knuckle down a little bit more. Look at them go, look at them kick,
makes you wonder how the other half live. When he finished school, Nathan got a job in the mines in the Upper Hunter. He played for the Muswellbrook Rams rugby league team. Other players remember him as not much of a footballer and a good reserve grader. Former supervisors around Muswellbrook, where Nathan worked, were reluctant to speak to Background Briefing about Nathan. 4 years ago, Nathan Tinkler made millions on a mining deal. It's no secret he left some of his employees waiting a long time to get paid. Nathan owned a company called Custom Mining Services that contracted electricians and fitters to mines in the Hunter Valley. Background Briefing spoke to a number of former employees who said they were often waiting up to 6 weeks to get paid and that there were weekly arguments about when the pays would be coming through. One former employee, who refused to be named, told Background Briefing that he couldn't understand why Nathan Tinkler couldn't pay him when Tinkler was driving around in a brand new car. Working in and around the mines, dealing with mining management, gave Nathan Tinkler and friend Matthew Higgins an idea. If these people could run a mine and be successful, anyone could. Background Briefing goes to Newcastle in search of Matthew Higgins. Hopefully I'm going to go knock on the door of someone that used to be in business during the early days when Nathan Tinkler first bought his first mine, Middlemount, where he had the shares in it, and one of his partners was Matthew Higgins. Matthew Higgins opted to get out of the deal or sell up early once they had established that there was coal and take the cash and run. Not much has been reported on Matthew Higgins, or no one's really had the chance, the opportunity to speak to him publicly at least, and I'm hoping to do so now.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Look, I'm up with Matthew Higgins. Hello.
Hello.
Who is it? Oh, Matthew. Is it Matthew?
Yeah, who are you?
Brendan King from Radio National. Sorry, I've been trying to find a number.
Sorry?
I'm from ABC Radio National. Sorry, I rang on the buzzer.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Look, I'm just hoping to have a bit of a chat to you for a couple of minutes. Just
what about?
I'm doing a story on Nathan Tinkler.
No, thanks, mate.
Really?
Awesome.
Right. It'll just be, you know, a couple of minutes of your time.
Mate, I like to pick to myself, so... Yeah. Talking to the wrong bloke.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Go, confidential, mate. I stay under the radar, so I'm not interested in talking at all.
Right. Is there anyone you suggest talking to, or...?
Talk to Nathan Tinkler.
Yeah, he's a hard man to talk.
Anyway, it's nice meeting you. Don't hurt yourself as you walk out, please.
All right. Okay, thank you.
According to the Financial Review, Matthew Higgins made $53 million from his investment of $200,000 from the Middlemount mine sale. Like many people from Nathan's past, Matthew Higgins no longer speaks to Tinkler. So how did the larger-than-life but evasive character, Nathan Tinkler, get so rich? Watching all this, working for the Newcastle Herald, was Ian Kirkwood.
Nathan got access to a resource in Queensland called Middlemount, and that had already been drilled through partially and no one really wanted it. It wasn't worth very much. The price of coal began to rise. Nathan looked at it and believed that there was more coal in there than what the geologists had found. It turns out he was right. Now, we've spoken in articles that I've written and other people have written to the investors that bankrolled him in those very early days, and he went hard by the skin of his teeth on borrowed money and was able to firm up that Middlemount resource. He then sold that to MacArthur Coal, which was an emerging coal company at the time, and instead of taking cash, he took their shares.
Nathan Tinkler had managed to turn a $1 million investment into $440 million in just 18 months. Finding out exactly what went on during the time Nathan was trying to get funding for the Middlemount mine is a difficult exercise, but it is a fascinating story of how the rich get rich. He gained support from a number of Newcastle businessmen. They introduced him to possible financiers and showed him how to get them on side. One story goes that Nathan was in so much debt that they were helping him to pay the rent as he was about to be evicted. He owed another law firm more than $100,000 for work they did around the Middlemount deal. He was also being taken to court over it until a local businessman arranged to renegotiate the debt, paid it, and asked them to call it even. Tinkler paid him back when things got better. After that, Tinkler moved on to the big end of town and the law firm Freehills. They are still his lawyers today. To pay some of the money he owed various people who had given him loans, he asked some of them if they wanted a stake in his business. One story goes that some declined right before Nathan Tinkler became a multi-millionaire from the Middlemount lease in Queensland. Nathan Tinkler was now very, very rich. But he didn't stop there. 3 years ago, Tinkler put in a bid through his company Aston Resources to Rio Tinto for a parcel of land in the Gunnedah Basin. He offered them $480 million for it. He spent $25 million of his own money and borrowed the rest. He then floated Aston Resources, and it's now worth more than $2 billion. Former banker and now mining expert with Griffith University, Jason West.
$480 million for the whole thing, and then borrowed through the Singapore investors, $455 million to secure the lease at a 15% interest rate. Now, he knew that that interest bill of, say, $75 million per annum was going to kill him. He decided to float the company, and it was a fairly rushed float, you know, through the GFC to get that company up, or the tail end of the GFC at least, to get that company up and running and floated to the market.
Jason West says Nathan Tinkler hopes the mine will be in production by 2013. It's a risky business. The proposal is to transport the coal to Newcastle by rail and onto ships for export. But more on that later. Nathan Tinkler likes the cut and thrust of big business deals.
Hi, Andrea speaking.
Oh, Andrea, look, it's Brendan King from Radio National. Look, I'm just hoping to speak to you about your experience in the thoroughbred industry and where Patnack Farm and Nathan Tinkler fit in.
Sorry, I don't think... No, thanks.
Why is that?
Bye.
He also likes horses and racing. Nathan came from a racehorse tradition. His grandfather, Norm Tinkler, was a horse trainer in the Grafton area. While Nathan Tinkler was growing up, he loved horse racing and having a punt. Nathan had a small stud with his dad, Les. But now he was cashed up and wanted to take on the big guns, so he started buying up horses in a big way. He set up a horse stud, Patnack Farm, and quickly became one of the biggest players in the country. Background briefing goes to the Upper Hunter, where two properties owned by Patnack are situated. It's also the centre of the Australian thoroughbred industry, and I go there to have a look.
I'm in Scone now, walking down the main street. Apparently it's the horse capital of Australia. I'm going to a Gay Waterhouse book launch, see if she's got anything to say about Nathan Tinkler and a little bit about the horse racing industry generally. Big day here in Scone today. It's the Scone Cup, the biggest regional races in Australia. So we'll walk down there and have a look. Hi, Gay. Brendan King, background briefing. I'm doing a story about Nathan Tinkler, and I'm hoping to maybe get a comment from you.
Well, Nathan Tinkler is larger than life in every possible way. Everything he touches turns to gold. And what a wonderful thing to think we have a gentleman like Mr. Tinkler involved in racing, that he loves racing. He loves all sorts of sport. Look at the different codes he's involved with. I've had the privilege of training for him a couple of horses, and he seems to be doing a great job at this point, his horses are, aren't they?
They'll be called up shortly for the running of race number two.
So I'm here at day two of the Scone Cup. The Patnack Farm Handicap is the next race. The horse is just coming onto the track now. It's also the second day in a row that Patnack Farms has pulled out all its horses from the events, or from the 2 days racing. And we're going to hear a little bit more from this race.
Red lights are on. Second event, standalone Saturday at Scone. Tullamore's a little bit anxious. In barrier number four, they're racing. Tullamore jumped away okay, straight Albert virtually beat it out.
Tinkler has bought the finest horses from all over the world, in France, New Zealand and Argentina. He now has one of the biggest racing teams in the country. He has spent an estimated $200 million in the horse racing industry in the past 4 years. The costs of running his thoroughbred team and stud is said to cost $20 million a year to keep it going. The horse racing industry is a very difficult place to make a profit. Prize money that owners occasionally win doesn't even cover the huge costs of training, racing, the vet bills and housing thoroughbreds. If a horse gets lucky and wins a few decent races, money is made from setting up a stud and charging for stallion services. To have a brood mare serviced by the top stallions can cost over $100,000. Also in Scone, we meet a former staff member of Patnack Farm. He didn't want to be identified, so we'll call him David Cole, and he has been revoiced by an actor in this interview.
Nathan's a big... he's a catalogue man. So we used to say that whenever there was a sale and there was a catalogue out, he'd buy. He could go through a catalogue. Horses always look good in the catalogues. There's lots of black type and good form, and they're bred from well-related families. But when you see the thing in front of you, you think that thing's so small it'll never be able to race competitively. He just believed that $1,000 that might have been off a stallion that cost $30,000, he just thought that was great value.
But did you suggest otherwise?
Oh, yeah, of course. He's quite his own man in that sense. I said to him, look, it's your money. In my view, they won't race. You're wasting your money on them and they're too small. But he needed to learn that lesson. There were horses that I was saying and that others were saying, they should never get to the racetrack. But he still wanted to go ahead and do that.
And you'd say that to him, would you?
Oh, yeah. We used to fight like fury. I would just call him every name under the sun and that he was wasting his money buying that sort of horse. He used to say, if you got the money, then you can make the decisions. I own it, so I'll do it. That's the nature of the man.
Despite the feuds, David Cole says he valued his time working for Tinkler.
Oh, I still say to people to this day we had a terrific time, and I bear him no grudge. He was very good to me. We had a lot of fun, and we had a lot of laughs, and I gave up a huge chunk of my time. I mean, this is a love job. I didn't make any money out of it. I barely covered my time away. But he was giving me the opportunity to really get involved in the thoroughbred industry. And, you know, I travelled the world and represented him on that basis. We had a lot of laughs, and it was a good time. It was difficult because his major mining deals, there was a fair amount of turbulence around getting the deals done. If I was going to be critical of Tinkler, he always committed himself to his next purchase before he had the money. But he always came through on those. While at times we had some difficult times, he certainly honoured his financial commitments.
David says some people were wary of Tinkler when he first came onto the scene, but they changed their minds after seeing him continually spending his money.
The older people had seen people come in and spend vast amounts of money and piss it up against the wall. So he was deemed as the next great white hope in that sense. He was holding the market up with the prices he was paying. It was an amazing sort of time. People would approach me asking what he's like. What's he into? Where's he going?
In 2008, David organised for Tinkler to tell a bit of his story to the industry during the Magic Million sale, one of the finest thoroughbred sales in the country.
What I talked him into at the Magic Million sale, we put on a big corporate event where Nathan Tinkler, being very shy himself, I got him up on stage with Andrew Bensley from the Sky Racing. We had a big cocktail party, and everyone from the industry was there. And I got Nathan up on stage, and Andrew interviewed him, and I got him to talk about his vision and where he was going, and he was quite staggering. And we would have had 500 people at Versace Hotel. We had comedians, we had entertainers. It was just a phenomenal night. People were blown away. And when Nathan got up and Andrew was interviewing him, everyone in the room was just absolutely silent as people hung on every word that he talked about the vision, about what his goals were, objectives.
He did well, do you think?
Oh, he was outstanding. It was fantastic. And our credibility was, well, the industry was so supportive and he got a standing ovation when he was finished. It was an outstanding night. But 3 weeks later, he sacked the Bococks.
Andrew and Lasker Bocock were very well-respected breeders, and Andrew came from 3 generations of thoroughbred stud owners. Sacking the Bococks was a shock to many in the industry. They both had one of the finest boutique studs in the country, and Tinkler wanted it. So he approached them and bought the property. He also organised the Bococks to stay on as managers. But, says David Cole, after a time, Tinkler wanted them out.
I just think that he didn't relate to them. He thought they were old school and he was young school, and that he didn't see them going the way that he wanted things to go. And he had not necessarily given them clear goals and objectives on how he wanted things done. They were the ones that knew the business and they were tracking along the way they would normally run their farm.
Nathan Tinkler avoids many people involved in the thoroughbred industry. Again, he's known as a slow payer. David Cole.
We had evidence of that this year, that Nathan wasn't able to buy at certain sales because he still had money outstanding. Inglis has told me directly earlier this year that when he's in the press touting about spending millions on the Newcastle Knights, yet he still owes them a vast amount of money. Why would they continue to give him credit when he obviously had the money, and that he was off making other acquisitions rather than pay his debts? That sort of indicated that until he took a sizeable chunk off his debt that he wouldn't be given any other credit.
Like Magic Millions, Inglis is also a major thoroughbred auction house. Inglis CEO Mark Webster wouldn't comment on whether Nathan Tinkler was cut off. But he did say that Tinkler's accounts were in order and that he had spent a large amount of money on the racing industry. David Cole says being late to pay affects the whole industry.
It affects less on the Magic Millions and the Inglises, who are quite well-resourced, but Nevertheless, they run a commercial operation and they have to meet the requirements and manage their organisation the way they deem fit. But they have got a degree of tolerance. The trainers, I mean, feed stores, farriers, the small operators in the industry, they very much rely on cash flow to keep their businesses running. They're much smaller, they don't have the funding behind them. Trainers in particular have a considerable immediate costs. You've got horses to feed and you've got track orders to pay and rent on stables and vet bills, they just keep coming in. They require cash flow immediately. So the impact on them is enormous.
Do you think people are mistrusting of the Patanac brand?
I don't think that they've done anything to instill the confidence in the brand.
David Cole says the industry's reluctance to accept Tinkler was his own doing and not because thoroughbred breeding is an exclusive club.
Look, I think whenever you've got an industry like that, it's not so much that there's a club. Well, obviously there are very significant players and very significant breeders that have been around for a long time. But they rely on external factors that enable them to sell at the right price. He was never going to be welcomed into that group with the ways that he was himself. He was non-communicative. He was single-minded in what he wanted to do. He couldn't demonstrate understanding or be prepared to take the advice of people that were well-regarded, that could help him establish himself. Once again, people like the Bococks. And that's what really demonstrated those issues, that allowed him to demonstrate his inconsistency and created such uncertainty.
A former Patanac staff member. Many reputable trainers had worked on horses owned by Patanac. Some of them were based in Victoria. In 2008, Tinkler wanted to have all his horses trained under the one banner. David Cole says Tinkler was hard on some of the top trainers in the country, like Anthony Cummings, Tony Noonan and Mark Cavanagh. Patanac Farm quickly gained a reputation for going through staff and was nicknamed Patton Sack because of the high staff turnover. Mark Webby was working at Patanac as a racing manager and was sacked in late 2009.
Yeah, I was called into the office one day on a Thursday and I was on my way to Wyong Races, to tell you the truth. We had runners there that day. And I got a phone call to say no, be in the Jan Randwick office by 1 o'clock, and I was asked to go upstairs to meet with Troy Palmer and I was dismissed on the spot. So, didn't you see it coming? No, I didn't see it coming.
Were you given a reason?
Nathan wanted to do everything his own way. Nathan wanted to program his own horses. My role was now redundant.
Mark Webby says working for Tinkler could be tough.
I mean, Nathan's very passionate. While we were winning, he was wonderful and supportive and, you know, very generous. But there was days when we did get beat and it was difficult. You know, the text messages were flying, left, right and centre. But, you know, as I said, he's very passionate, wears his arse on his sleeve and we got to expect it. As a team, if we didn't win a race on a Saturday, we expect to be, you know, sort of given a bit of a spray over it. So,
what did the text messages say?
Oh, you know, it's not good enough, you know, your embarrassment of the Patanac brand and so forth, you know, my horses are better than this and, you know, what we come to expect, a bit of volatility within.
But you didn't have a brand, as it were. The brand was pretty much just starting out, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was our first season and I thought the success rate and the strike rate was quite good, you know, from what we had to race. You know, Jason did a wonderful job with the small amount of horses we had there to be able to race. You know, we only came into business just before Christmas, or just after Christmas, sorry, about the 27th of December that year. So to get two horses to the slipper in April and then sort of win a Group 1, you know, towards the end of the carnival in April and then another one in June, was a you know, pretty impressive, you know, start to the Patanac brand.
Patanac Farm is currently in a legal battle with Anthony Cummings, son of renowned trainer Bart. Cummings claims he's owed $167,000 in training and upkeep fees. In a judgment relating to a preliminary hearing earlier this year, Justice Michael Ball sets out in his judgment that Anthony Cummings also acted as an agent for Patanac in 2008 for the purpose of acquiring horses at various sales. Patanac Farm is counterclaiming that Mr. Cummings took secret commissions from vendors selling horses to Tinkler in excess of $2 million. In a second cross-claim, Anthony Cummings and his company, Anthony Cummings Thoroughbreds, claim commission payable on the sale of 3 racehorses to Patanac. Mr. Cummings admits receiving commissions, but says they were fully disclosed are not as excessive as claimed. But otherwise, Cummings denies the claim. The case will be heard later this year. Everyone's eyes are on what Nathan Tinkler does and what he'll do next. He's held in awe. But he's also the brunt of one of Newcastle's comics. Gareth Wozzyk thinks Tinkler's acquisition of big parts of Newcastle is like a huge buffet.
He's kind of treating Newcastle like an all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, he's got the salad bar, you know, which is his Newcastle Jets. He sort of is walking past that. That's just to get him in. You know, he's got the pasta bar. That's the Knights, I think. I sort of feel it's the Knights because, you know, everyone has a go at the pasta bar and tries to make it work. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does. And then he's got his meat smorgasbord, and I think for him that's the mall, you know. The jewel in the crown is the meat and the prawns and all that sort of stuff, and something for Novocaians to really enjoy. That's the meat portion of the buffet. And then, you know, of course we've got the dessert bar, which everyone loves, and I'm sure Nathan does as much as everyone, or more than everyone. And the dessert bar, I think, is the collator that he wants to put in. You know, it's just snuck up on you, but it's there, you know.
Nathan Tinkler has always loved fast cars. Just down the road from the Newcastle Jockey Club is Beaumont Street. 6 years ago, the Newcastle Herald ran a story, and here's a reading.
Hunter Street, Hoon. Magistrate Richard Wakeley fined Nathan Leslie Tinkler, 29 of Beaumont Street, Hamilton, $1,600 in Newcastle Court yesterday. He disqualified Tinkler for 6 months for driving a car 108 kilometres an hour in a 60 zone in Hunter Street at 2:15 p.m. on September 19.
Today, $1,600 is small change. Nathan's love of fast cars continued after he made his millions, and 3 years ago, he joined a club called the Supercar Club. Tim Summers was part owner and founder of the Supercar Club, based in Mossman on Sydney's North Shore. And a cashed-up Tinkler was keen to join.
Yeah, he joined through his... He has got a lifestyle manager, a guy called Corey Baldock, that works for him. Not only is his lifestyle manager, he's his kind of pseudo-bodyguard and personal trainer. So Corey invited me up to their offices in Brisbane and wanted his father and Nathan to join the club. And so the process kind of followed, and Corey did the paperwork. Didn't meet Nathan at the time, and it was done by kind of fax and an email, and Nathan and his father joined.
So they were members then. Was that a process that you went through with all your members? Did you meet them first?
Yeah, listen, I mean, that's a good question. So generally, it's quite a disciplined process to joining the club. You know, it's not like joining some kind of small club. The entry fee was between $25,000 and $50,000 a year. And for that fee, the members got to drive, you know, extraordinary cars, an extraordinary collection of maybe 30, 40 cars. So they're taking out $500,000 Ferraris and Lamborghinis. So the process was quite disciplined. And generally, one would, you know, meet the prospective member, you know, go through their driving history, you know, talk to them, make sure they had a similar passion for cars and for people and the club. And then they'd go through an application process. You know, it was different from Nathan, and that's because Corey asked it to be different for Nathan. And I suppose that we allowed that to happen because, you know, by reputation, the week before he was on BRW's youngest or wealthiest rich list are under 40. So we allowed that process because of privacy reasons, I suppose.
Not long after he joined the car club, Nathan Tinkler wanted to invest in it. While Tinkler was a member of the club, he hadn't met Summers.
We were raising money anyway, and Corey Baldock was aware that we were raising money and suggested it to Nathan. And at that point, you know, there's no arm twisting involved. Nathan phoned me, I didn't phone him, and asked me to meet him in the Western Hotel. We had a very open conversation. And right away, he was very open and said he wanted to invest in it, that he'd be a great partner, that he was passionate about cars, that he could introduce me to, you know, a significant number of new members, and, you know, he said between 40 and 50, that he could help with the financing facility and give us a rolling facility of between $6 and $7 million. Another added benefit through his business relationships.
But the relationship started to turn sour. Tim Summers says things between the two became difficult.
We had a tempestuous relationship. I mean, it's not a question of there was any communication issues to start with, because, you know, far from it. I think that, you know, Nathan is a charming guy when you first meet him. You don't get to where he's got without knowing how to manage people. It's just when you actually get into bed with him, he changes. After the charminess, it became very, very quickly obvious to me that he might not be best suited.
The supercar club was losing money. In 2009, Summers claims he was stood down as CEO on the request of Nathan Tinkler. The Tinkler Group and Summers ended up in the Supreme Court of New South Wales after Tinkler claimed that Summers had misappropriated more than $450,000 and kept cars and motorbikes belonging to the club for personal use. Summers' defence team claimed that it was Tinkler who owed the company money. In his judgment, Justice Richard White found that he had serious reservations about the credibility of Tim Summers, and stated that he saw everything through a prism of self-interest, but he did not reject all his evidence. Parts of the evidence Summers gave to the court in his 80-page affidavit have been blanked out. Other parts are not. The edited affidavit was read out to the court. In one part, it explains a Ferrari event put on by the club. Summers sent Tinkler a photo of the evening. Tinkler responded, and here's a reading.
"Where are all the topless chicks? We're male effing chauvinists, mate. How are we going to attract members? You need to watch the skulls. That's what we should be trying to create."
Another claims Tinkler is saying,
"It's costing me $2 million of cash a month to run Patternac Farms, so I have more important things to worry about than the supercar club."
Nathan Tinkler didn't turn up to court or submit any evidence. In the end, Justice White found that both Summers and Tinkler engaged in oppressive conduct while running the supercar club, and were both ordered to pay each other a lot of money. Tim Summers says he's just about to publish a book about the supercar club and his experience with Tinkler. Tinkler's legal team tried to stop the book, citing concerns about defamatory material being released, and in April, Tim Summers agreed to provide Tinkler's lawyers with a copy of the book 48 hours before it was to be published. Tim Summers' lawyers say the Tinkler team now have a copy. Back in Newcastle, and the Tinkler group are still playing hard to get.
So I'm outside the offices of Nathan Tinkler. I'm going to go and see if I can have a talk to him. Let's go and have a look then.
I decide to try and speak to some of the management of the Tinkler group, as by this stage, an interview seems out of the question. But no sooner had I made it into the office than the receptionist shows me the door. Nathan Tinkler still has to get the Big Maules Creek coal mine up and running, and then get the coal to the Newcastle port from the Gunnedah Basin. He wants to build another coal loader in the city to get the coal from the trains to the ships for export. The interest on the Maules Creek mine deal is said to be $75 million per year. So Tinkler needs to start selling coal to pay off his loans, or the banks will come knocking on his door. The Maules Creek deal is a huge gamble. This is probably Tinkler's biggest hurdle at the moment, convincing the city that it needs another loader, and one close to residential housing. And for a city that in the last decade has moved away from its dependence on the steel industry, it's a big hurdle. And will local residents approve? Newcastle Herald journalist Ian Kirkwood.
Now, the reason that's important is because Newcastle, as you know, has a long history as an industrial town. The steelworks, when it was here, made this place filthy. The day the steelworks shut, the next day was the first time as I drove down from Charlestown into work that I had ever seen across the other side of the harbour. You couldn't see across there because the air was just like brown, thick. Now the air is clearer here than Sydney. It's generally except that there wasn't going to be coal there. So for Tinkler to come along and say we want to put coal right next to people's houses, I know there's coal there already, but this is more. And about the same, it would be about double the size of what's there now. Just, you know, kind of flies in the face of the established planning practices.
But Tinkler's just bought two football teams, and many have begun to wonder if the two deals are connected. Newcastle Mayor John Tait.
You could be cynical and say, well, his strategy is to win favour with the local community through supporting these sporting teams. And when he's achieved that, people will then say, look, he's done a lot of good, so if he wants a coal loader, well, we ought to be sympathetic to that. Now, that's one point of view. There is another point of view, and that point of view is he has a real deep and honest desire to help and be part of the Newcastle and Hunter community. He has a desire to support sport in various ways, and he's prepared to put money into that.
John Tait. But who is Nathan Tinkler, and why does he carry so much weight in Newcastle? Aaron Carney.
Newcastle and the Hunter, and I have lived here for 40 years and been a journalist here for 20 years. I feel like I'm speaking about my own family, and I include myself in all of these comments. If I was to make a social and political observation about the region, it comes from its working class roots. It is used to being treated poorly. There is all sorts of data about how the revenue that is generated by this region way exceeds anything that is returned to us by government. Infrastructure-wise, we are the poor cousins of Sydney, and you could mount an argument even some regional areas. It doesn't get nice things. It's not used to nice things, and there's an argument that it doesn't like nice things because it's never had them. In some ways, Nathan Tinkler has come and played Santa Claus in this region in a way governments have never been able to do. He brought the biggest football star in the world to town. He brought the biggest rugby league coach in the world to town. All of a sudden, Dad won Lotto, one of our own won Lotto, and started buying nice things for the region. That's wonderful, and we're still in that honeymoon period. The big question for the Hunter is, how long will that honeymoon last, and what will be the circuit breaker in that? Quite what will Nathan Tinkler expect in return from the region for his generosity? If the answer's nothing, then Santa Claus has indeed come. If the answer is something other than nothing, well, it's going to be watch this space for the next decade or so.
Aaron Carney says Nathan Tinkler will need to get used to all the attention.
The idea that he can be this quiet, sparky, done good from the Upper Hunter is no more. Nathan Tinkler is a household name. I could strongly argue the best known name in the entire Hunter region now. And everything that he does, business-wise or privately, is going to be either newsworthy or at least gossip-worthy forever. That's inescapable. And if he is uncomfortable in the spotlight, he's either going to need to get comfortable or he's going to have a lot of discomfort in the rest of his life because the spotlight is his future. That's inescapable.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Researcher and website, Anna Whitfeld. Technical production, Timothy Nicastri. The voicing for the interview was done by Chris Burke. Background Briefing's executive producer is Kirsten Garrett. I'm Brendan King. This is Background Briefing, and you're listening to ABC Radio National. On Away, Rico Adrin brings you a series of programs to mark the centenary of the Northern Territory.
People were still saying Aboriginal people will just disappear.
We're not giving enough attention to the question of the way in which Aborigines can live with us, not alongside us, but with us.
It wasn't about protection. It was about development and progress of white civilisation.
That's Away, and you can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.